Chapter 12. Patricia McLean picked up her daughter's frightened thoughts. At once, she said, "Rothman, we've been infiltrated. Marianne says so."
"Is she right?" Rothman, old, hard-eyed and tough, demanded from where he as their leader sat.
Looking into Pete Garden's mind, Patricia saw his memory of the visit to Dr. E. R. Phillipson, the strange sense of lightness, of fractional gravity as he walked down the corridor.
"Yes," Patricia said. "Mary's right. He's been on Titan."
She turned to the two precogs, Dave Moutreau and her husband Alan.
"What's going to happen?"
"A variable,"
Alan murmured, ashen-faced.
"Clouds it up."
Moutreau said hoarsely,
"Your daughter, she's gonna do something. Impossible for us to tell what."
"I have to get out of here,"
Marianne said to them all. She rose to her feet, her thoughts scattered by her terror.
"I'm under Vug influence. That Dr. Phillipson, Pete, must have been right. He asked me what I saw in the bar, and I thought he was hallucinating. But it wasn't my fear he was picking up. He saw reality."
She started toward the door of the motel room, panting.
"I have to get away. I'm dangerous to the organization."
As Marianne went out the door, Patricia said urgently to her husband,
"The heat needle, set it on low so it doesn't injure her."
"I'll cut her down,"
Alan said, and pointed the heat needle at his daughter's back. Marianne turned for an instant and saw the heat needle. The heat needle jumped from Alan McLean's hand, climbed and reversed in flight. It smashed against the wall.
"Poltergeist effect," Alan said. "We can't stop her."
Now the heat needle in Patricia's hands quivered, struggled, and tore loose from her fingers.
"Rothman," he said, appealing to the highest authority in the organization present, "ask her to stop."
"Leave my mind alone,"
Marianne said to Rothman. Pete Garden, on his feet, sprinted after Marianne. The girl saw that, too.
"No,"
Patricia called after her.
"Don't!"
Rothman, his forehead bulging, concentrated on Marianne, his eyes virtually shut. But all at once, Pete Garden flopped forward like a rag doll, boneless, danced in the air, his limbs jiggling. He drifted then toward the wall of the motel room, and Patricia McLean screamed at Marianne. The dangling figure hesitated briefly and then swooped into the wall. It passed through the wall until only its outstretched arm and hand remained, projecting absurdly.
"Marianne," Patricia shouted, "for God's sake, bring him back."
At the door, Marianne halted, turned in panic, saw what she had done with Pete Garden, saw the expression on her mother's face and on Alan's face, the horror of everyone in the room. Rothman, focusing everything which he possessed on her, was trying to persuade her. She saw that, too, and...
"Thank God,"
Alan McLean said, and sagged. From the wall, Pete Garden tumbled back out, fell in a heap on the floor, intact. He got up almost at once and stood shaking, facing Marianne.
"I'm sorry," Marianne said, and sighed.
Rothman said,
"We hold the dominant possibility here, Marianne, believe that. Even if they have gotten in, we'll examine everyone in the organization, person by person. Shall we start with you?"
To Patricia, he said,
"Try and find out for me just how deeply they've penetrated her."
"I'm trying," Patricia said, "but it's in Pete Garden's mind that we'll find the most."
"He's gonna leave," Alan and Dave Moutreau said almost at once.
"With her, with Marianne," Moutreau said. "She can't be predicted, but I think he's gonna make it."
Rothman rose to his feet and walked toward Pete Garden.
"You see our situation. We're in a desperate match with the Titanians, and losing ground to them steadily. Prevail on Marianne McLean to stay here so we can regain what we've lost. We have to, or we're doomed.
I can't make her do anything, Pete said, white and trembling, almost unable to speak.
Nobody can, Patricia said, and Alan nodded.
Oh, you PKs, Rothman said to Marianne. So willful and stubborn. Nobody can tell you anything.
Come on, Pete, Marianne said to him. We have to get a long way from here because of me and because of you, too. They're into you just as they are in me. Her face was drawn with despair and fatigue. Pete said to her,
well, maybe they're right, Marianne. Maybe it would be wrong to go. Wouldn't that split up your organization?
They don't really want me, Marianne said. I'm weak. This proves it. I can't stand up against the Vugs. The damn Vugs, I hate them.
Tears filled her eyes, tears of impotence. The precog Dave Moutreau said,
Garden, I can preview one thing. If you do leave here, alone or with Marianne McLean, your car will be intercepted by the police. I foresee a Vug detective moving toward you. Its name is...
Moutreau hesitated.
E.B. Black,
Alan McLean, also precog, agreed, finishing for him.
Wade Hawthorne's partner, attached to the West Coast Division of the National Law Enforcement Agency. One of the best they have, he said to Moutreau, and Rothman nodded.
Let's do this carefully, Rothman said. At what point in time did the Vug Authority penetrate our organization? Last night? Previous to last night? If we could establish that fact, maybe we'd have something to go on. I don't think they've gotten very deep. They haven't reached me, haven't reached any of our telepaths, and we have four of them in this room, and a fifth on the way here, and our precogs are free. At least so it would seem.
Marianne said, You're trying to probe into me and influence me, Rothman.
But she returned slowly to where she had been sitting.
I can feel your mind at work. She smiled a little. It's reassuring.
To Pete Garden, Rothman said,
I'm the main bulwark against the Vugs, Mr. Garden, and it'll be a long time before they penetrate me.
His leather-like face was impassive.
This is a dreadful discovery we've made here today, but our organization can surmount it. What about you, Garden? You're going to need our help. For an individual, it's different.
Somberly, Pete nodded.
We must kill E.B. Black, Patricia said.
Yes, Dave Moutreau said. I agree.
Rothman said,
Go easily here. We've never killed a Vug. Killing Hawthorne was bad enough. Sufficiently dangerous, but necessary. As soon as we destroy a Vug, any Vug, it'll become clear to them not only that we exist, but what our final intentions are. Isn't that so?
He looked around at the organization for confirmation. But, Alan McLean said,
they obviously know about us already. They could hardly penetrate us without knowing of our existence.
His voice was sharp, edged with exasperation. The telepath Merle Smith spoke up from her seat in the corner. She had taken no part in the colloquy so far.
Rothman, I have been scanning each person here in the motel, and I find no indication that anyone has been penetrated, in addition to Marianne McLean and the non-P Garden, whom she wanted brought here. Although there is a peculiar inert area in David Moutreau's mind, which should be looked into. I wish you other telepaths would do that right now.
At once, Patricia turned her attention on Dave Moutreau. Merle, she discovered, was correct. There was an anomaly in Moutreau's mind, and she felt at once that it implied a situation unfavorable to the interests of the organization.
Outreau, she said, can you turn your thoughts to...
It was difficult to know what to call it. She had, in her 100 years of scanning, never run into anything quite like it. Puzzled, she passed over Moutreau's surface thoughts and probed into the deeper levels of his psyche, into the involuntary and repressed syndromes which had been excluded as part of his ego character of the conscious self-system. Now she was in a region of ambivalent drives and of nebulous and stillborn wishes, anxieties, doubts interwoven with regressive beliefs and libido wishes of a fantastic nature. It was not a pleasant region, but each person had it. She was accustomed to it by now. This was what made her existence so rife with difficulty, running into this hostile area of the human mind. Each perception and observation which Dave Moutreau had rejected in himself existed here, imperishable, living on in a kind of half-life, feeding deeply on his psychic energy. This was what made her existence so rife with difficulty, running into this hostile area of the human mind. Each perception and observation which Dave Moutreau had rejected in himself existed here, imperishable, living on in a kind of half-life, feeding deeply on his psychic energy. He could not be held responsible for these, and yet there they were anyhow, semi-autonomous and feral. Opposed to everything Moutreau consciously, deliberately believed in opposition to all his life aims. Much could be learned about Moutreau's psyche by this examination of what he chose to or had to reject from consciousness.
The area in question, Patricia said, simply will not open up to scanning. Can you control it, Dave?
Moutreau said haltingly, a bewildered expression on his face.
I don't understand what's being discussed. Everything in me is open to you as far as I know. I'm certainly not deliberately holding back.
Now she had picked up the precognitive region of Moutreau's mind, and by entering it, she made herself temporarily a precog. It was an eerie sensation to possess this talent as well as her customary one. She saw, as if arranged in neat boxes, a supple, viable sequence of time possibilities, each one obviating all the others, strung so as to be knowable simultaneously. It was pictorial, and oddly static rather than dramatic. Patricia saw herself, frozen in a variety of actions, some she blanched at. They were hideous, sequences in which she yielded to her most deranged suspicions, and...
My own daughter, she thought bleakly.
So it's possible that I might do that to her. Possible, but not probable.
The majority of sequences showed a rapprochement with Marianne, and a healing of the split within the organization, rather than a widening, and yet... It could happen. And, in addition, she saw in one swift instant a scene in which the telepaths within the organization pounced on Moutreau. And Moutreau himself certainly was aware of this. The scene, after all, existed in his consciousness. But why? Patricia wondered. What could he do that would warrant this? Or what could we discover? Moutreau's thoughts became diffused all at once.
You're evading, Patricia said, and glanced at Merle and then at the other telepaths in the room. It's the arrival of Don, she said to them.
Don was the missing telepath on his way now from Detroit. He would arrive any time.
In Moutreau's precog area, there's a sequence in which Don will, on his arrival here, ferret out the inert area involved. We'll open and explore it, and... She hesitated, but the three other telepaths had picked up her thought anyhow. And will destroy Mutro because of it, she had thought. But why? There was nothing to suggest the Vuggish power about it or about him. This was something else, and it completely baffled her. Was it certain that Don would do this? No, only probable. And how did Mutro feel, knowing this, knowing that his death was imminent? What did a precog do under such circumstances? The same as anyone else, she discovered as she scanned Mutro's mind. The precog ran. Mutro, rising to his feet, said huskily,
I've got to get back to the New York area, I'm afraid.
His manner was easy, but inside the opposite.
Sorry, I can't stay, he said to Rothman. Don is our best telepath, Rothman said meditatively. I'm going to have to ask you to remain until he gets here. Our only defense against the penetration of our organization is the existence of four telepaths who can dig in and tell us what's going on. So you must sit down, Mutro.
Mutro reseated himself. Closing his eyes, Pete Garden listened to the discussion between Patricia McLean, Mutro, and Rothman. This secret organization, composed of Psi people, stands between us and the Titanian civilization, its domination over us, or some such thing. His thoughts ran together muddily. He still had not recovered from last night and the manner in which he had been awakened this morning, that and Hawthorne's pointless, shocking death. I wonder if Carol's all right, Pete thought. God, he thought, I wish I could get out of here. He thought of the moment when Marianne, through her psychokinetic talent, had made him a floating particle and tossed him into and through the material wall of the room, and then somehow, for reasons unclear to him, had let him come back. She had changed her mind at the last instant. I'm afraid of these people, he said to himself, of them and their talents. He opened his eyes. In the motel room, discoursing in shrill, chattery voices, sat nine Vugs, and one human being besides himself, Dave Mutro. He and Dave Mutro standing in opposition to the rest of them, hopeless and impossible. He did not stir. He simply stared at the nine Vugs. One Vug, it spoke in the voice of Patricia McLean, said agitatedly, Rothman, I've picked up an incredible thought from Garden. I have too, another Vug said in agreement. Garden perceives us all as... It hesitated. He sees us, with the exception of Mutro, as Vugs. There was silence. The Vug which spoke as Rothman said,
Garden, this implies, then, that the penetration of our group is complete. Is that right? Complete with the exception of Dave Mutro, at least.
Pete said nothing.
How can we consider this,
the Vug calling itself Rothman said,
and keep on being sane? We've already lost if Garden's perceptions are to be believed. We must try to consider rationally. Possibly there's some hope. What do you say, Mutro? If Garden is right, you're the only authentic Terran among us.
Mutro said,
I have no understanding of this.
He glanced at Pete.
Ask him, not me. Well, Mr. Garden,
the Vug Rothman said calmly,
what do you say?
Please answer, the Patricia McLean one pleaded. P Pete, in the name of all we hold holy.
Pete said,
I think you know now what there is in Mutro that your telepaths couldn't scan. He's a human being, and you're not. That's the difference. And when your last telepath gets here, we'll destroy Mutro.
The Rothman Vug said slowly, thoughtfully.